doing the job sometimes means that we just say no to these brilliant ideas.
The legislative session officially ends. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, July 18th. Good evening. I'm Zachariah Hughes, filling in for Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaskans are having their say at the Republican National Convention.
We want them to actually do something about giving the federal lands back to the states in the West that belong to them.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
3 days after the State House's adjournment, the Senate has also gaveled out, ending the latest special session in Juneau. In closing remarks, senators differed over how successful the body was in addressing the state's legislative challenges this year. Democratic Minority Leader Berta Gardner of Anchorage says she was disappointed the legislature couldn't agree on a comprehensive fiscal plan.
It requires moving places where we might have thought we would never go. And It's what we had to do here, and we all knew that coming in, but we didn't. And so to say I'm disappointed feels inadequate.
For the third year in a row, Alaska's government is projected to spend billions of dollars more than it collects in revenue. At this rate, Governor Bill Walker has warned that the constitutional budget reserve will be exhausted in 2 years, potentially leading to steep cuts in government services. But members of the Republican-led majority say more attention should be paid to areas where the legislature passed bills. Senator Anna McKinnon, a Republican from Eagle River, points to agreements on Medicaid and criminal justice reform, as well as changes to power cost equalization and community revenue sharing.
The Senate and the other body, the minority and the majority, House members in the majority and minority moved huge pieces of legislation to benefit the people of Alaska.
Although they might reduce spending by significant amounts in the future, neither the Medicaid nor corrections bills are expected to save much this year. Fairbanks Republican Senator Pete Kelly notes that unlike the House, the Senate passed its version of the state budget a month earlier than in previous years. The Senate also passed a bill restructuring the permanent fund earnings, a measure Walker sees as the centerpiece to a long-term fiscal plan. But Kelly shied away from pointing blame at the House for opposing the permanent fund bill. He says constituents across Alaska rejected the legislation.
Doing the job sometimes means that we just say no to these brilliant ideas that come out of the governor's office or out of the Senate or the House.
The Senate Resources Committee is still scheduled for a meeting tomorrow to discuss the development plan for Prudhoe Bay Oil. Walker may call another special session, but it would likely occur after the November elections. Governor Bill Walker also created a new cabinet-level position today in his administration, an oil and gas advisor. He appointed John Hendricks to the job, who most recently worked as general manager for Apache Alaska, a company that pulled out of the state in the spring, citing low oil prices. Walker made the announcement during a speech today at an Anchorage Chamber of Commerce lunch event. He says he has long believed the state needs a good working relationship with the oil and gas industry.
And so I've created a new cabinet position, working within our budget. We're not adding anything to our budget, to bring a person on that would act as my liaison and my advisor on all oil and gas issues.
Walker says Hendricks understands Cook Inlet, where Apache mainly operated, as well as the North Slope. Walker angered many in the industry last month when he vetoed more than $400 million in tax credit payments the state owed companies. Today is Hendricks' first day on the job. His salary is $185,000. Hendricks is an advisor, not a commissioner, so he doesn't have a department. A A former Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation employee has pled guilty to distributing child pornography. A release from the Alaska Department of Law says Gene Geisler told the Anchorage Superior Court he possessed and distributed about 2 million images and 13,000 videos showing suspected child sexual exploitation. In 2014, Geisler worked as YKHC's computer network manager. In September of that year, state investigators searched his home and workplace and found 29 terabytes worth of exploitive material. Geisler had downloaded many of the images and videos by connecting YKHC's computer network to his home server. Assistant Attorney General Adam Alexander says YKHC was unaware of what Geisler was doing at the time, and the Health Corporation helped law enforcement throughout the investigation. Alexander says state authorities spent hundreds of hours investigating the case in what's turned out to be one of the largest collections of child sexual exploitation Alaska troopers have encountered. Geisler's sentencing is scheduled for November 11th. He faces up to 99 years in prison. The Anchorage Police Department has released the names of the officers involved in last week's fatal shooting. Officers Cole Grigg and Bart Filipowicz both fired on 23-year-old Benjamin Zakovich after he advanced on them while throwing weapons. The incident took place after a robbery at Home Depot in East Anchorage. Both officers were put on a four-day administrative leave after the July 12th incident. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, subsistence hunting in the age of the internet.
These elders wanted the seal meats, and a seal just happened to pop up on our beaks.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, fueling philanthropic programs and dedicated to creating educational and professional opportunities for Alaska Native people. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Party conventions aren't all about funny hats and nominating presidents. As APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, Alaska delegates to the Republican National Convention in Cleveland are using the gathering as an opportunity to spread their Alaska-specific agenda to a national audience.
When you're a small state, it helps to have allies. As luck would have it, the Alaska delegates are staying in the same suburban Cleveland hotel as the Wyoming delegates, and they've been networking. At a Wyoming-Alaska breakfast reception just before the start of the convention, Alaska U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan appeared with Wyoming Senator John Barrasso. Sullivan says that on key issues, there's no daylight between Alaska and Wyoming.
Energy, on the use of federal lands, on overregulation from federal agencies. These are things that when John and I are working in the Senate, literally, I can almost finish his sentences.
That common purpose helped add a public lands statement to the party platform. It calls for the government to convey some federal lands to the states.
Basically, that we want the Congress and everyone to actually not urge, we want them to actually do something about giving the federal lands back to the states in the West that belong to them.
Judy Elledge is an Alaska delegate who helped draft the plank. That's convention speak for a position statement that becomes part of the party platform. She worked with Wyoming delegates to get it through the platform committee last week. She says they aren't trying to diminish national parks or monuments, but she believes federal control of other undesignated lands is bad for Alaska.
It shuts us down. There's things that we can't do. You know, that's how our economy is based on our lands, most certainly out in the West where there's oil and there's gas.
This is, of course, controversial. Lots of people don't think the government should give away land. One member of the Montana delegation, Congressman Ryan Zinke, even left the whole convention over it. But as with other Republican principles, getting it in the party platform is no guarantee the party's presumptive nominee for president, Donald Trump, will support it. In fact, when asked by Field and Stream in January, Trump was against divvying up public lands.
Is that something you would support as president?
I don't like the idea because I want to keep the lands great, and you don't know what the state's going to do with them. Are they going to sell as soon as they get into a little bit of a trouble? And I don't think it's something that should be sold.
Elledge, the Alaska delegate, says she thinks Trump was speaking from an East Coast perspective. She thinks he might change his mind as he learns more. Regardless, Elledge, a diehard Ted Cruz supporter, says she accepts Trump as the people's choice. There's also a different effort to raise Alaska concerns at the convention, specifically trying to inform Republicans about the importance of resource extraction to Alaska. Drew Pierce is a former state Senate president. She helped coordinate a letter signed by Alaska's congressmen and both senators that serves basically as a primer on oil and gas matters. The original copy was mailed to Trump, but Pierce says they're getting it out at the convention any way they can.
We're making sure that anybody who has access to people within the Trump organization or now to the Pence organization, we shove them a letter.
Visually, the Alaska delegates stand out in matching blue convention cusbucks. A diagram on the back shows the map of Alaska imposed over the lower 48. That's another message they hope to convey. The state has few people, but it's huge like no other. Reporting from the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, I'm Liz Ruskin.
BP Exploration and Hillcorp Alaska have agreed to pay fines after spilling oil and waste on the North Slope. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced the companies will pay $130,000 in federal penalties. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney reports the unrelated spills both affected sensitive Arctic tundra.
The EPA says the Clean Water Act violations by both companies affected Arctic wetlands that support wildlife like caribou, ptarmigan, and geese. EPA spokesman Mark McIntyre says the North Slope is one of the harshest environments where companies operate in Alaska. It's also one of the most ecologically sensitive.
We know that the tundra is kind of like a big sponge and is completely overlaying water that drains off and runs to various tributaries, to rivers, and then rivers to the sea.
Hillcorp had a breach in a production line in its Milne Point field. The leaky pipeline caused nearly 10,000 gallons of crude oil and water to spill onto about an acre of land. The company will pay $100,000 to the EPA. BP will pay $30,000 in federal penalties for spilling 700 gallons of waste onto 33 acres of tundra and gravel pad. That spill was caused by a frozen rupture in one of the company's lines in Prudhoe Bay. McIntyre says spill cleanup on the North Slope can be complicated by winter weather. Hillcorp response crews had to struggle through blizzard conditions, while BP workers had to remove acres of contaminated snow.
A lot of times, frankly, these spills happen at the worst time of the year, when it's the coldest, when it's the darkest, when it's really puts people at risk in terms of responding and trying to fix things when they spill. So it's really in nobody's interest to have anything spill.
Neither company agreed to interviews about the incidents. Both sent prepared statements. Hillcorp spokeswoman Lori Nelson says it's proud of its response to the spill and inspected other similar pipeline sections as a result of the incident, while BP spokeswoman Don Patience says the company has worked to strengthen safety and risk management. EPA relies on the companies to report the spills. After the agency notifies a company it's considering a fine, McIntyre says the companies get the chance to weigh in.
They come in and negotiate with us, and we end up at a final penalty.
Each case is resolved differently. Sometimes the money goes to the state, sometimes to the federal government. In BP's case, the company will pay $30,000 in penalties directly to a federal fund that's used to pay for cleanup when spills occur and the responsible party is either unknown or refuses to pay. BP also settled its case with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation after its spill. It will pay the state $100,000. Hillcorp could still face further fines from its Milne Point spill. A spokeswoman from DEC says the state is investigating the incident and its case is still open. Both companies have reported dozens of spills in Alaska since 2014, but most of the discharges are minute amounts of fuel or oil field chemicals. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
Akiak Native Community is calling for an emergency meeting of the Association of Village Council Presidents tomorrow and Wednesday in Bethel. Some village representatives say the sitting leadership of AVCP has hijacked authority from the tribes that created it. The meeting is not sanctioned by organization leaders who say the campaign is the work of a small group of delegates. Activists say the sitting leadership also has failed to answer specific questions about the organization's finances. AVCP officials say many of the people laid off have been rehired, and the organization is implementing a quality improvement plan. A wildfire 10 miles south of Anchorage is at about 60 acres. State fire officials say the McHugh Fire, which was reported late Saturday night, is burning uphill in difficult terrain. State Fire Information Officer Tim Mowry says they are getting a better understanding of the human-caused blaze.
It's not necessarily spreading as much as it is. We're just getting a better look at it and figuring out what we're dealing with here. A lot of times early in incidents, you know, these estimates are rough estimates because there's a lot of smoke involved and you're not getting a real good look at the fire. And now we've got some folks on the ground and in the air, and that 60-acre is our latest estimate.
Two air tankers dropped 18 loads of retardant on the flames on Sunday, while helicopters dropped water from Turnagain Arm. Today, as retardant and water drops continue, three ground crews are working the perimeter of the blaze and cutting a saw line around the area, which is part of Chugach State Park, just off the Seward Highway. No structures are threatened by the fire at this time. Denali National Park is reopening areas that were closed for multiple weeks because of a problem bear. The bear first started charging hikers in late June and was rewarded with a backpack full of food thrown to try to deter him. The young grizzly then bit a visitor in early July. Park spokeswoman Kathleen Kelly says Savage River area visitor facilities and trails are only open conditionally.
If anybody even spots or, you know, even sees this bear, we will close the area immediately.
Kelly says they intend to kill the bear if it is found that because of abnormal aggression towards humans. For the first time in 6 years, Alaska's cruise industry is on track to hit the magic million passenger mark by the end of the season. Industry leader John Binkley, president of Cruise Lines International Association Alaska, says the number is about 2% higher than last year.
Worldwide, it's about an 8% annual growth is what we're seeing. So we see a smaller percentage, but we're kind of moving along with the trend in the industry.
The trade group says Alaska-bound ships used to carry about 8% of the worldwide cruise market. Now it's only half of that. Binkley says the drop is caused by global competition. He says the fastest-growing market is in Asia, which is attracting new customers, especially from China. He says that could help Alaska in the long run.
Once that capacity and that growth is seen in Asia, then the hope is that in later years, it will be a source for cruise passengers coming to Alaska. So initially competition, later a market that will increase more dramatically visitors to Alaska.
He says anecdotal evidence and market research show many new customers in the Asian market also want to cruise to Alaska.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Arctic is wild, remote, and untouched. See how contemporary artists challenge the mythical ideal of the North in the Anchorage Museum exhibition, View from Up Here, the Arctic at the Center of the World, on view through October the 2nd. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Museum.
A 19-year-old from Western Alaska was honored last week at the White House for his work advocating on behalf of communities experiencing climate change firsthand. Esau Sinek spoke to me from his cousin's house in Nome on his way back home to Shishmaref. He was in Washington advocating for climate equity.
Climate equity to me means that we'll have the available resources so that Shishmaref could have the available resources to either relocate or adapt to climate change so that our future generations can have fun and to experience the lifestyle that I had the privilege to, so that our future generations can live a traditional lifestyle that our ancestors have been living for the past 4,000 years on Shishmaref.
In your own life, have you seen changes to the climate?
Yeah, ever since I was born in 1997, we had to move about 24 houses from one side of the island to the other because of big storm surges that happened in Shishmaref so that they don't topple over and go into the ocean. It affects me personally because I lost a loved one. He fell through the ice when him and my dad and a few others went out to the mainland on their snow machines on the ice to go duck hunting, and on their way back, he fell through the ice, and he thought that the ice would be frozen like in previous years, but for some reason it wasn't frozen all the way, so he fell through and lost his life.
What's one of the messages from Alaska that you've tried to bring to the attention of other influencers and other leaders?
I always tell other people, wherever I go and whoever I meet, that the youth voice is very powerful, that the youth are the future leaders of tomorrow. It's very important for us youth to have a voice in all these types of movements and all these types of issues, because the future that we're going to inherit is being decided right now, and it's affecting my hometown of Shishmaref greatly, affecting 223 communities all across Alaska greatly, and not just in Alaska, but also in the Gulf Coast, in the lower 48, like in Louisiana and in Florida, those states.
And can you tell me what it was like at the White House?
It was like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity at the White House. I had like goosebumps and my heart was beating every time I was there. Like, I couldn't believe that I was there. Like, I'm just a rural village native kid, and to experience that, it felt like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for me, and I would love to get other youth involved to feel the same experience and to feel what I felt when I was there.
My last question for you is just what your next step is.
I am currently studying at the University of Alaska Fairbanks in tribal management, and hopefully continue with a rural development degree so that I could go back to Shishmaref and run as city mayor, and then experience how to lead a community so that I could hopefully one day run for governor of Alaska by the year 2030 to represent not only the big cities like Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau, but also the rural communities. I want to make a change and try and make a positive and better future so that our future generations can live in a safe environment and don't have the problems that I'm seeing every time I'm back at the community.
Well, it was wonderful talking with you.
Thank you so much.
That was Esau Sinek from Shishmaref, one of the White House's climate equity advocates, talking about change in the Arctic. And the changing climate is not the only thing that residents of Western Alaska are worried about impacting subsistence lifestyles. For others, it's the internet. The Arctic Broadband Summit wrapped up in Barrow last week. Crews are busy off the coast of Nome laying fiber optic cable this month, and GCI recently announced plans to bring high-speed internet to 10 more communities in the region this year. The community of Stebbins is on that list, and while many are excited for faster service, as KNOM's Emily Russell reports, some fear subsistence could suffer.
It's a spectacular summer day in Stebbins. Fish racks are filling up, berries are blooming, and Bernard Abuchik is sitting on the beach with a rifle under his arm.
These elders wanted a seal meat, and a seal just happened to pop up on a beach, and now we're just waiting for it to come back.
Those elders are farther up on the beach with their eyes glued to their horizon. Many of them were around before villages like Stebbins had stores that sold prepackaged meals. They had to watch the horizon for seals, scan the tundra for berries, and travel long distances by dog sled for caribou.
We lived with the seasons. We had spring camp, summer camp, fall camps, and we lived off the land.
Charlie Kitka grew up in Marshall, a village on the Yukon River about 100 miles south of Stebbins.
Nowadays, nobody goes out into the country anymore. Just very few people do that.
Kitka says more and more people across the region aren't learning subsistence skills like net mending and fish processing. Instead, he says they're turning to modern conveniences to put food on the table.
Our younger generation, all they know how to do is go to the store and get something quick that they can put into the microwave to eat.
Morris Nishonak says a lot of that has to do with modern distractions.
We've got more kids into iPads and iPods.
Nishonak is the mayor of Stebbins. Like many other village elders, he worries technology is tempting kids away from their traditional roots. He says kids from his village would rather be home playing video games than out gathering greens.
They're spending like 9 to 12 hours a day with their toy. And we'd like to encourage the younger generation to be more active in subsistence gathering and hunting.
That may get even harder, though, in the months to come. GCI is promising to bring high-speed internet to Stebbins by the end of this year. Doreen Tom thinks that's a good thing.
Well, right now we have GCI over here at the office, and it's really slow.
Tom is the city clerk for Stebbins. Internet in the city office will cut out for hours sometimes, which Tom says is a real problem when she's under a tight deadline. And Tom isn't just excited for faster internet at work. While she admits kids aren't as involved in subsistence as she was growing up in Stebbins, Tom says she doesn't mind the distraction in her own home.
They get to stay home more if they have internet on the phone, and I like it when the kids are home because I know where they're at.
That's understandable in a village where bootlegging leads to binge drinking and often violent behavior. On a day like today, though, it seems like nothing could keep kids inside. Back on the beach, Bernardo Bucic's nephew, who can't be more than 7 or 8 years old, comes up next to him.
And what's he holding in his hand right now?
He's got a toy gun he's been playing with.
His nephew and a few friends were pretending to be hunting seals on the beach when a real seal popped its head above the water. Abuchik laughs as the boy pretends to load and unload the toy gun.
And that was just so funny because they were playing hunting seals, and then a live seal came up in front of them, and they just got adrenaline rush and happy.
It's that happiness and rush of adrenaline that Abuchik says can't be conveyed over the internet, no matter how high speed it is. Reporting in Stebbins, I'm Emily Russell.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman, Ed Schoenfeld, and Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Cleveland, Ellen Lockyer and Annie Fite in Anchorage, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Emily Russell in Stebbins. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Ann Hillman produced tonight's show. Our web editor is Wesley Early, and I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to slow down and take care with any cleaning, fueling, or painting products while maintaining your boat this summer. Be smart to save money and protect our marine environment and our beautiful ocean and coastline. Let's keep the water clean and keep our fish healthy. For more information, go to alaskacleanharbors.org. This message is sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
The Alaska Public Radio Network, in cooperation with our member stations, provides the most complete, timely, and accessible source of Alaska news, current affairs, and cultural information.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.